One of my favorite TV shows of a day gone by is Frasier. Yes, I feel like I can relate to these guys. They're pretentious and supercilious, and they use big words like pretentious and supercilious, and that's me. It means snobby, right? And I feel like I have that sort of default. And one of the reasons why I think those guys became really pretentious and supercilious, really snobby, is that they often talk in that show about how they had really rough times in gym class. And I also feel like I can relate. Niles at one point says that he has what he calls a swimmer's build. If you don't know what that is, you're looking at it. And it's left him with some scars. And it doesn't work out so well for him. I can remember many times in gym class having to stand in that lineup while there are two captains here and they're going to pick everyone first before me. Because I was not only the guy with the swimmer's build, I was also competing with my friend for being the shortest, second shortest guy in the class all the way through grade school. Like, grade school was really, really hard, and gym class was easily the worst part of it. And I remember standing in that line wondering, am I going to get picked last again? And that sucks. And I see some nods out there, so either you're just empathizing or you've been there. But either way, thank you. But you know what? There's the odd time where I was probably the captain picking those people to be on my team. And you know what? When I was the captain, I did the exact same thing to my other friend, the shortest guy in the class, as happened to me. You know why? Because I got the exact same standards. And there's an issue going on inside. Exact same standards. I can relate to these guys in this parable who get picked last. And we're going to get there. But before Jesus tells that parable, he's got something going on in the audience. Last week, we were talking about the rich young ruler. The rich young ruler comes up to Jesus, and he's one of the guys that would have been picked first in line. He's got absolutely everything going for him. He's rich, and he's righteous, and he's rich because he's righteous, according to some ways of interpreting the Old Testament. And that's the way the disciples view this guy. This is the guy that we want on our team. And when he talks to Jesus, he says, I've kept all the commandments, and Jesus seems to agree with him. Now, I don't have time to unpack that more. We did it last week. But that comes right before this section that Bev just read for us. The rich young ruler is promised treasure in heaven if he simply gives up what he's got here and he sells it, gives it the money away to the poor, and he comes and follows Jesus. That's what's on offer. And Peter hears what Jesus tells this guy about having treasure in heaven. There's something in it. There's going to be some sort of reward. And so he asks Jesus, well, you know, we've left stuff behind. What's in it for us? What's in it for me? And, you know, I can relate to that question. What's in it for us? Because Peter is essentially saying that this has been costly to follow you, Jesus. This has been costly. Can any of you relate to that? It's actually been hard for you to follow Jesus. I can. So in case you weren't quite sure whether or not you wanted to put your hand up there, I can relate to the fact that it's been costly to follow Jesus. Maybe you didn't have as many friends because you were maintaining a different sort of standard. Maybe you were the designated driver for all your friends who looked like they were having a lot more fun. Maybe it's been costly for you because you recognize that God actually has different standards for marriage, and even when your marriage got really difficult, you stuck it out, and it got costly. It would have been easier to bail. You know, I am sure that you can fill in the blank in quite a number of ways on how being a Christian has actually made life a little bit more hard at times. And I think Peter's got that in mind. It's cost us to be with you, Jesus. We had to give some stuff up to be here at the moment. What's in it for us? And Jesus goes, that's a really good question. And what does he say? I tell you truly, at the renewal of all things when the Son of Man is seated on his throne in glory. You who have followed me will sit on 12 thrones and will start judging Israel. That's the first part of what he says, and then he gets into rewards. Renewal and judgment. Any of you know who Dante is? Dante. We know the name. Dante, back in, I don't know, 15th, 16th century, something like that, wrote these terribly long and boring books about what hell, purgatory, and heaven were supposedly going to be like. And his picture of heaven, in the end, is it's a giant stadium where everyone sits in their seat and stares at God in the middle. And it's this worship experience. It sounds incredibly boring, right? Like, I'm sorry, it's incredibly boring. This has, or we've been told that heaven is sort of clouds and harps and things like that. Again, like really, really boring stuff. Like, earth looks a lot more appealing than Dante or Philly cream cheese commercials, right? For those of you who remember those. But that's not the picture. Jesus says, at the renewal of all things, not when we go up and spend time sitting on clouds with harps. At the renewal of all things, when heaven descends to earth, I'm not going to ride my hobby horse here for too long, for those of you that know that this is one of my hobby horses, but heaven comes to earth at the renewal of all things, and earth and everything that you like about earth that is actually good is going to get better. So when you think heaven, future life with God, please don't think that this is going to be some sort of Christian concert where we're going to sort of worship by singing and that's going to be it. And not to denigrate that, simply to say it's going to be a whole lot more than that. It's the renewal of all things. And it's going to be like this earth, only better. And Jesus promises that when the renewal comes, there's going to be an evaluation that takes place. And God's going to ask us basically, what did you do with Jesus? And then how did you live for Jesus? Because then this passage goes on to talk about rewards. So Jesus says, everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or children or fields, whatever you've left behind, whatever it's cost you to be a faithful follower of Jesus, you're going to get it back 100 times over, whatever that means. He says, you're going to receive 100-fold and will inherit eternal life. The reward is not heaven. Notice the and. The reward is not heaven. The reward is not just the renewal of all things and we get to continue to be there. There is actually something there that goes beyond simply the fact that you get to be there. We get to be there, but then there's going to be reward beyond that. And I don't have a good way of describing that. Sorry. But Jesus promises that there's actually going to be a different sort of life for us there, and the quality of that life is going to have something to do with the way that we've used the things that God has given us right now. The Gospels frequently talk about reward. Like, it comes up like 20 different times in the Gospels. Jesus talks about reward. Sermon on the Mount. Don't go praying publicly where everyone gets to applaud you because you're so eloquent. Pray in secret. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Don't fast in such a way that everyone can see you fasting, and that becomes your reward because you are so pious and everyone looks up to you. Fast in secret. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Jesus talks in a different part of Matthew about if anyone welcomes a righteous person, that person will receive a righteous person's reward. If anyone welcomes a prophet, the person who welcomes him will receive a prophet's reward. If anyone offers a cup of cold water to a child in my name, if you do it for my sake, Jesus says, you will surely not lose your reward. Rewards actually come up pretty frequently in Scripture. And it's just left with the word reward. It isn't really described. but maybe we shouldn't just sort of gloss over them. Jesus actually thinks that this is something of a motivator for people, or it should be. So, that's what we're going to have to think a little bit more about. That there is actually going to be something in it for us. It's sort of okay to be selfish in this way. Jesus says, but many who are first are going to be last. And many who are last are going to be first. In other words, it's not really going to work out the way that we expected it to. The disciples watch this rich young ruler walk away sad, and they go, that wasn't supposed to happen. It's not going to work out the way that we expect it to, because we are still using the same standards that I, as captain, looking out across the field of people who could potentially be on my team, I'm still using the wrong standards. Because I'm not going to be compassionate and generous and gracious like God is. So let me help us hear this parable now. We're actually going to read this parable again. But this parable has a group of people standing on the street corner. And these are the poorest of the poorest of the poor. They have no assets, they have no fields, they have no place to work, which means they have no way to feed their family this night. So every day, Dad is going to walk down to the street corner, and he's going to wait and hope and pray that someone hires him for the day, so that when he gets paid at the end of the day, he will be able to rush to the nearest bakery and buy food to feed his family that night. So can you picture this guy on the street corner? Put yourself in this guy's shoes. He's going to wait there hour after hour after hour. And the only thing that he is going to be thinking about is, how on earth am I going to feed my family tonight? Because if I don't get hired, we don't eat. Can you imagine being that guy? I cannot imagine. There's no social safety net in those days. And you know what? Who are the people that get picked first? The people who can work hard. The people who don't have the swimmer's build, right? The people who look like they're going to be able to do a great job out in the field. Who are all the people that are going to be left last? Well, it's the crippled, the old, the scrawny, maybe some of the lazy too, obviously. People who got hired before and the guy realizes, I'm never hiring that person again because I saw how poorly he worked. But it's all of the people who get left last for being picked are the lowest of the low. They are the least likely to succeed. And they're desperate. Hear this parable with that in mind. God's kingdom is like an estate manager who went out early in the morning to hire workers to work in his vineyard. And they agreed on the wage of $1 a day and went to work. And later, about 9 o'clock, the manager saw some men hanging around the town square and they were unemployed. And he told them to go and work in his vineyard, and he would pay them a fair wage. And they went. He did the same thing at noon and again at 3 o'clock. And at 5 o'clock, he went out and found still others hanging around. And he said, what are you still standing here doing nothing? They said, well, we're here because no one hired us. So he told them to go work in his vineyard as well. When the day's work was over, the owner of the vineyard instructed his foreman, call the workers and pay them their wages. Start with the last hired and go on to the first. Those hired at 5 o'clock came up and were each given $1. When those who were hired first saw that, they assumed that they would get far more, but they got the same. Each one got $1. And taking the dollar, they groused angrily to the manager, these last workers put in only one easy hour, and you have made them equal to us, who slaved away all day long under the scorching heat of the sun. The manager replied, friend, I haven't been unfair to you. We agreed on the wage of $1. So take it, go. Go home to your family. I decided to give the one who came last the same as you. Can't I do what I want with my own money? Or are you going to be stingy because I'm generous? Here it is again, Jesus says, the great reversal. Many of the first ending up last, and the last ending up first. this parable illustrates two things. First, that line has been repeated. The first and the last, there's going to be some reversal happening. It's not going to look the way my team looked because the standards for evaluating are way different. It's not going to look like success the way we measure success. What does success look like in the secular world? I mean, when we think of important people, what makes people important? What makes them successful in the world's eyes? Just call it out. Money. What else? How do they get money?
Power.
Yes. How'd they get their power? How'd they get their money? Fame. That's another one. They're rich. They're powerful. Position. They're good looking. They have influence. They've got education. They've figured out how to climb to the very top, whatever it is. And that's the way that we measure success, isn't it? We measure success in the Christian world too, don't we? What does success look like in the Christian world? Church world. Not much different, probably, is it? Have you watched the Dove Awards? Does it really look much different? They got a red carpet in the Dove Awards, right? What does success look like in the Christian world? Well, we're going to have a pastor who's going to be at the very top. He's going to be sort of like a CEO. We're going to give him a really big corner office. I was hanging out with a pastor in town recently. He and I went out to get Slurpees or something like that, and he showed me his office afterwards. He's a really humble guy, and he was so deeply embarrassed by the fact that the church had given him an absolutely palatial office. He had like multiple couches in there with area rug and everything. He was so embarrassed, like absolutely embarrassed by it. But clearly the people who designed that church building had a certain view of what success and power and prestige in the Christian world look like, don't they? I want you to know that when we talked about building offices here, our CEO, senior pastor, wanted them all the same size. Humble guy. He gets this. Not everyone does in the Christian world. The great ones of tomorrow are not going to look like the great ones of today. The great reversal is taking place. That's what Jesus says. Now, this is the culmination of the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are those who are persecuted. You're going to end up on top. It's coming true. That's what Jesus says. Have any of you read the book The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis? If you take one thing away from today, you should read that book, because he will put into a narrative what I can't even begin to approximate just by doing this thing here. But there's one point in that book where these people are sort of, they've moved from earth to sort of the outskirts of what you might call heaven. They say, this isn't heaven, we are just on the borderlands. But the great reversal has taken place, and the main character is watching things happen, and he's being instructed by a guy who's been to heaven and has now come back to help him move in that direction. And he encounters along the way one person who is being treated like a queen by everybody in heaven. Being treated like an absolute queen, absolute royalty. And he makes the mistake of thinking that she must have been a queen on earth. And his guide tells him, you should absolutely never think that whatsoever. This person that you see being now treated like a queen in heaven was a nobody whose name you would not even know, who lived in a really poor part of town, and she was single. But you know what she did? She cared for every person and animal that she met in her lifetime. She was the most humble, ordinary, nobody, and God is now honoring her because the great reversal has taken place. That's what's going to happen, friends. Parable illustrates two things. The first is the great reversal, and the second is God's incredible generosity. I don't know if you've heard in the last number of years, around Christmas time, often there have been these news reports where some anonymous rich person has gone into Walmart and taken care of everything that's on layaway. So people have put things on layaway because they are hoping to be able to have enough money by Christmas time to be able to buy it. So they put their name on it and they've set it aside and they're raising the money in the meantime. And people have been going into Walmarts and saying, whatever's on layaway right now, tally it up because I'm going to take care of it. Now, a couple of people have done this in the last number of years. They paid off $50,000, $60,000 tabs on Walmart layaway to make someone's Christmas a little bit better. That is just a tiny, tiny, pathetic little glimpse at what God's generosity is actually like. Because if you think God is going to be less generous than that, we might want to think again. So what's your view of God? Is God stingy? Is God a miser? Is God a cranky Santa keeping his naughty list? And sucks to be you, you're going to get coal? Like, is that the way that we think of God? We often, a number of years ago, I really did think that the God of the Old Testament was the angry, cranky God. I had to go to school to sort of relearn that. But one of the ways I relearned that was realizing that actually Jewish people never read their Old Testament that way. And Jesus certainly does not read his Old Testament that way. This is not the cranky or stingy God by any stretch of the imagination. So Jesus, when Jesus looks at this God, he says to his disciples, it is the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. God delights to give his children good things. Absolutely delights. It's what brings him joy. Think of that verse in the Psalms. The Lord is good to all. He has compassion over all that he has made. That's the view that Jesus has of the Heavenly Father. God is incredibly generous and incredibly compassionate. And he's incredibly generous and incredibly compassionate to people who really don't deserve it and to people who would never have expected it, like this parable. He's the guy who would hire lazy, undeserving workers whom everyone else has picked over, and he will give them the exact same wage in a way that makes absolutely no business sense whatsoever. God is an insane business manager who just wants to show compassion and generosity to people. That's the picture of God that we get from this parable. That's the point that Jesus wants to drive home. When we think about God, does the first word, generosity, come to mind? Is that the first thing that comes to mind when we think about God? God is deeply generous and deeply, deeply compassionate. I hope so, because those are the two main things that this parable drives home. Now, does anyone want to interact a little bit over this? Has this raised any sort of questions, anything you'd like clarified before I move on? Dennis, yeah? Sure. That's an excellent question. So Dennis asked, Jesus says, before he introduces the parable, Jesus says that it looks like you're going to get, you know, more than you deserve, and you're going to get 100 times more and so on. And then in the parable, everyone gets the same thing. Christian communism, or is it? That's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. The parable wouldn't work if everyone was paid differently, because Jesus' point is that there's a reversal happening and that God is deeply generous. So if everyone had been paid in such a way that you got only what you earned and not more, or you all got paid, then the parable itself wouldn't work. The story would fall apart. Does that make sense? Yeah. Not yet. Okay. If Jesus had told the parable... he would not have been able to say that there's a great reversal that's happened if everyone gets paid according to the normal way of paying people, right? But he pays everyone equally in order to show that there's been a reversal and in order to show that there has been generosity to people who didn't deserve it. The parable would have fallen apart if people had all been paid differently, because that's the exact opposite of the point that Jesus is trying to make. That's an That's an excellent point. Excellent question. Anyone else? Dwight? Mm-hmm. So Dwight is pointing out that there are two reversals happening. The first is between the rich young ruler versus the disciples, and the disciples are making it in ahead of the rich young ruler, but then there's also the reversal of how people get paid in the parable itself. Yep, absolutely right. There might even be a third reversal, which might be that Jesus is telling this to the disciples who are already in and wondering if they're actually thinking, yeah, we thought we were in, and we thought we were actually ahead of the other people. But who are we in this parable, right? Are we the guys that got hired last, or are we the guys that, because Jesus picked me first? Where am I in this parable? Multiple reversals happening. Good observation. Kent asked, isn't this more about the character of God than reversal? As I said up here, I think it's both at the same time. I mean, Jesus says twice before the parable and then immediately after the parable that the first shall be last and the last shall be first. So he is definitely emphasizing reversal. But then what comes out very clearly in the parable is the generosity of God. I mean, that's what the hero of the story says. Don't I have the right to be generous with people? And he demonstrates the generosity by paying people who don't deserve it way more. So absolutely, two main points. Yeah, absolutely. People have sometimes wondered, well, sort of coming back to the Christian communism thing, will they all get the same reward? The parable of the talents is going to come up later in just a couple of chapters. Parable of the talents is coming. That's the one where there's this picture of a rich man who gives his servants, some of them he gives them five things to look after, some of them three, some of them one, and he asks them to go and be faithful with them. And then when they've been faithful with them, he then gives them different rewards according to what they did with what they had. So these two parables are sort of in conversation with one another, and they are illustrating different points. So that's why I really wanted to emphasize these are the two main points of this parable, as we can see it actually drawn out in the text. The parable of the talents is then going to make a different point about the rewards are going to be differentiated. It is actually going to depend on how well we do with the things we've been entrusted with. We'll get to the parable of the talents in a couple of weeks. Okay. Great questions. What can we take from this? When it seems like the rich are getting ahead, or when it seems like the people who aren't following Jesus are just having either an easier life or having more fun or more successful or fill in the blank, remember, there is a great reversal that is going to happen. And I'm not talking about they're going to get what they deserve. That'll come up later on as well. But this parable is talking about you are going to get more than you deserve. You are going to be deeply, deeply rewarded for following Jesus in a way that's really difficult to describe. We sang that song, I Can Only Imagine. Unfortunately, we have really small imaginations when it comes to thinking about what that life will be like and what the rewards will be. We struggle and grasp at language that's really, really elusive. That's why I definitely recommend that you read The Great Divorce, because C.S. Lewis is one of the few people who can put in story form something beautiful and joyful and make it appealing to people. Because most of the novels that I read have to do with trouble, right? And evil. And C.S. Lewis has a way of making goodness and joy actually look appealing in a way that I simply can't. So I really encourage you to read that novel. It's really short. It's profound. When the Christian life gets hard and we ask what is in it for us or is it worth it, we do need to remember, this is actually going to be worth it. Let's not forget that. Your life will pay off because God is deeply generous and deeply compassionate. And when we go on in the scriptures to read about final judgment, there is final judgment. But it starts with a story about God's deep compassion and deep generosity. So keep that in mind as we move ahead. Let's pray. Lord, forgive us for small imaginations that don't grasp what the future holds for us. We often don't care too much about it. So may we be reminded of Jesus' words that it will be worth it and that you are generous and compassionate beyond our expectations. So thank you for the ways that we have experienced your generosity already. We don't deserve this much. We deserve much less. But your grace continues. Thank you. Amen.